This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. Let's start. Episode 30. No one knows, and there's no reason for me to say this, but this is the third time we've attempted to start this recording.
Is true.
And my computer decided it needs to restart itself or Adobe or some combination of the
something.
Two. So if this recording ever makes it out, just know that we tried so hard.
And but also you started it differently each time, which I appreciate.
I do it for you because someone's got
someone
to bring you up. I guess it's me because it's just two of us here. A kitty, maybe. Episode 30.
Episode 30.
I don't even want to pretend that you don't know that I looked up the anniversary because I've already admitted this is the third take. But on the,
first time, it was a surprise.
You were very surprised. So anyone who has celebrated 30 years knows, without a doubt,
it's Pearl.
Pearl.
Yeah.
And I didn't get you anything, and I refuse to get you anything. Maybe episode 100. I'll get you something.
What is the 100-year anniversary?
I don't know.
I don't think it goes up that high. It might. I don't know.
It should.
Of course.
I believe in true love. That's how I get through the days. So it better be something. I'll look it up next. Send it in.
I'm struggling with the math, but it's okay.
People live to like 120.
You said that with confidence.
I saw some article recently about people who lived like the longest lives. It's because I read a bunch of books about longevity.
There you go.
And
so now you said it with confidence for a reason.
Because I know.
And
these
so
facts.
Two people married to each other
for 100 years. That's probably never happened. That's today's episode. So we'd like to thank you for joining us. just that topic. No, we're actually going to sort of revisit something we've talked about, but
kind of with
good reason because.
Yeah. Because it keeps coming up.
And
people have asked us to talk about it again. I don't know if we're going to say anything enlightening or illuminating, but we're gonna try to be helpful because people have clearly asked for us to talk more on the subject. And so we're going to.
And it's actually been a wildly different set of people. Like, it's not as if everyone in biotech wants to talk about this or everyone in just oil and gas wants to talk about it's been everywhere.
Yeah.
So clearly it's very topical.
If you will. Yeah. And so
I did.
The subject is this cross-section between this idea of learning from people that have experience and then also the recognition that we have an inexperienced workforce in many places, meaning that people just aren't coming into industry with as much experience in a trade or in a job than historically we've had in recent past. And what that means, what we should be doing about that, the ramifications of that, and then sort of how does that all fit into this hop space? And that's a question that keeps coming up over and over again. And most recently, kind of the reason that we thought it would be helpful to talk about is because it's coming up when we're trying to help people separate the idea of system problems and person problems. And we've talked about this many times on the episode before, right? But if you happen to just be jumping into this, right, the person problems are problems that follow the person around. And oftentimes they're hiring mistakes, and we want to give people a fair chance to change before we ask them to leave. System problems follow the system around. So a lot of people are encountering the same difficulties. And that distinction, I guess, sometimes creates what feels like a gray area in which people are asking about person problems specifically related to inexperience. So when we ask people to teach us what are the person problems that they're seeing, you know, people will say, well, you know, somebody who's bullying others or somebody who's like can't listen to any instruction or, you know, like people are just really don't want to be on a team with them. And then this other topic comes up of yes, and also people who don't have enough experience to be in the job. And we want to talk about that statement because that's incredibly important for us to understand.
Yeah, I think we often say system problems masked as person problems. Mm-hmm. Right. So we just think we have a person problem, but really is a system problem. This one, this topic in particular, I think is incredibly challenging because some people often talk about this outside of industry and outside of work.
Oh yeah. In the social fabric of society.
Yes. The idea of the younger generation.
Yes. If you will.
And the problems with it. And I laugh.
Tell us more, Matthew.
Because I was like, I looking up something relevant to what we're going to talk about. And I came across a long article and it was quotes over from 4 BC or 4,000 BC. It was an Aristotle quote ranging to a quote from the 90s of everyone talking about the new generation, like how bad the new generation is going to be. It's just consistent across time.
This is not a new problem.
Part of being human, I think, at this point.
Not a new problem of us having frustrations with a generation that is not ours, not our own. So let's see if we can sort of detangle some of the thought process of what it means to have folks that are inexperienced. And we, in a previous episode, we talked about the idea of how the workforce is changing in terms of experience level and the market, what is available in terms of bringing people into work and how much experience they have. But we want to sort of quote a bit of what we're hearing when we go and talk to folks about this, and then hopefully we can talk through it and make some sense of it. But when we ask about, hey, are we having person problems? People will say, yeah, I mean, people are just not experienced for the role. I mean, we have folks coming in that have never even turned a wrench before, and they're in charge of making sure that we've got our equipment PM'd properly. And if you do it wrong, you could lose your life. That is for sure a problem. Like we're not.
Yes. Yes.
We're not trying to say it's not a problem. Like most things that are pushbacks in this space, they come from the fact that we really do have a problem. It's how we're choosing to define that problem that becomes important.
And just to play around with that a little bit, how do they often define it when they're showing up like that? Do you think in their perception is the problem?
Yeah. So usually when it's coming out in conversation, the perception of the problem is that the person who is inexperienced is the problem, meaning you shouldn't be in this role unless you had more experience. And I can only think of like a couple ways in which it truly is a person problem and somebody is in that place. And I'll give you an example. Like this is what I would say is an example of an actual person problem, where you ended up with somebody inexperienced in a role. That would be if you're hiring and it is clearly stated that you need, let's say, 5 years experience with a certain skill set in a certain trade, and a person presents themselves as having that experience, but they don't. And so they're hired into a role that they have, I mean, pretty much lied in terms of their experience on their application and in terms of the stories that they've told you to get themselves into that position. And now a baseline of skill set that is necessary to get the job done doesn't exist, not because of what we've asked for in terms of skill or of what we were looking for in terms of how we were doing our hiring process, but because the individual, you know, just flagrantly lied about their experience. And now they're in a position where they don't have it and they needed it to be successful.
And the expectation on hiring them was they had that experience.
Correct. Yes. And they talked to that experience and then it just turned out not to be true. Yeah. That for sure. I mean, we're dealing with a person problem in terms of we've made a hiring mistake and this person does not have the experience they need for this job. Sure.
That's the example I gave you earlier was, if the Minnesota Vikings were hiring a defensive coordinator and I applied for the job and said I had a bunch of experience, what have I never done? I never played football in any setting outside of Pop Warner, but I said, well, I have experience because I played Madden.
There you go.
There you go.
That's a great example.
Put me in, coach. I got it.
And also, we should also look at the hiring practices that you could get through with that as your resume. But anyway.
It's just charm. just charming.
So in that circumstance, absolutely, we're dealing with a person problem. But that's not what's happening in most circumstances. Like, I'm sure there's one-offs, and probably some people listening to this have some story related to that, and they are fascinating stories, and it's not that it's never happened before. But when folks are frustrated, and they're repeatedly frustrated in an organization of saying, hey, yeah, these people, referring to usually a generation of folks, these people are coming in and they don't have enough experience. We have intentionally hired those folks because perhaps that's all the market has to offer in terms of experience level, or perhaps we believe that our training process is good enough to be able to bring somebody up to speed quickly. That isn't a problem with the individuals we're hiring. That is a problem with the system set up to find the folks, hire the folks, and give people enough experience in order to allow them to be successful. So if we do find ourselves at an endpoint of we have a person in a position that they don't have enough experience in order to be successful in that position, it is a problem. But it's oftentimes a problem with the system that allowed them to be in that space, not because we have a person problem and that is how we're defining our hiring mistake. It is not a mistake to hire a bunch of people to do a job and then teach them how to do it. That's not the mistake part. The mistake part might be not doing that well enough to have somebody be in the field with enough experience to be able to get the work done.
And this is also something you can look at if you can zoom out a little bit and be a little bit more macro about it. In situations where we talk about there being one person who was not the right fit,
right?
Maybe it's a personal problem. Maybe it's still the same situation. But if you're saying everyone coming in is not a fit, they're not properly trained, or they don't have the right experience. Well, if it's everyone, chances are it's probably a system problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you could probably across the board, you can apply that everywhere we're talking about system problems. When it's everyone entering into the system, it's a system problem.
Yes. Yeah. If we got a whole team of people and, you know, we're a superintendent or a supervisor, and we're like, well, we have tons of person problems. We got a whole bunch of people that don't have the experience to do this. It's not the people. It's the fact that we have a given set of conditions of who is available to hire. And it's the fact that we've chosen to hire folks that don't have experience for whatever subset of constraints has made that make sense to do. And then that is our starting point that we then have to somehow fill in the gap to get someone to a place where they do have enough time on job to be able to make sense of changing conditions. And this is especially true in places where we have lots of changing conditions, where that you have a dynamic work environment and it truly is the person's ability to adapt that has kept things afloat in the past. And now we're seeing with less experience that, you know, a small error in one place could lead you to have catastrophic failure. That is a portion of what we really are working on this hop space, is to find those brittle areas so that it isn't as simple as somebody just making an error or somebody making a mistake or a judgment call and having catastrophic failure. And the great news is that folks that are newer to an organization can see that quite clearly. The scary news is that if our systems are so brittle that a lot of those error traps or those judgment call locations, if there's a lot of them, then the chance of something very terrible happening is quite high. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations are seeing that right now, right? They're having really horrible things happen to their process and to their people, and then pointing to the fact that they have an inexperienced workforce as the reason. They're not wrong. But also, that's not the lever that we would need to pull in order to make things better.
Yeah. It's like, well, we had the average tenure of our employees was 20 years experience, and they were super great at adapting. And this new crop of people can't adapt it. Well, of course they can't. They don't have the experience and have seen all the changing conditions to know where to adapt. There's also a whole part we could go into about, you know, the hiring philosophy of all I have to do is follow our procedures because our procedures are perfect. We won't get into that today.
No.
That's a whole separate conversation.
No.
But if it is, that is our thought process, it can cause even further distance from the actual problem.
Absolutely. So I guess the good news in all of this is that there are lots and lots of places for us to be looking to improve, as long as we can get beyond sort of the subset of, I'd say, like simmering anger that we seem to feel in many places of just that's this.
A, less of a simmer, more like a rolling boil.
Rolling boil. Yeah. Of just this feeling that all of our problems would go away if we had more experienced people. But if we can get beyond that thought process, well, then we have lots of actual tangible places to start improving.
Yeah. And you're going to call it out again because yeah. this is, we've talked about this multiple times in things like accountability. If you realize that it is multiple people, it's a system problem, you're still going to have that anger. Now let's go and do something about it.
Correct. Yeah. And to do that, we have to start to define places that we can make improvement. And we can't snap our fingers and create an entire market of people that have 20 years of experience in the fields that we're hiring in. So we can't do that. So we know that that's not a lever that we think we can pull. If you have figured out how to do that, do let everyone else know because nobody has figured out how to do that.
Time travel is the only way they exist.
So if you're working on time travel and you do have a solution, let people know.
If you're close, let us know.
And then
give me the first guest we have. I'll bring you right on. You can replace Andrea tomorrow.
But in absence of being able to do that, there's a few areas that we can make improvement in. The first is looking at the places that we have incredible system brittleness that can lead to catastrophic failure and designing things differently, right? That perhaps is the most difficult of these aspects to do, but probably the most important in terms of being able to limit consequence, meaning we should be learning from the people who do have a ton of experience and the folks who are new and learning about the places in which if you mess this up, if you mess this step up, and you don't have a bunch of years of experience to catch that you've messed it up, or like it is really easy without a bunch of experience to do it wrong, we need to be looking at those places and actually physically changing the design of something to either make it harder for us to mess up or probably most importantly, make it so that the consequence of whatever happens after it is messed up is controlled so that we don't have catastrophic failure. So that's...
I'm going to cut you off.
Yeah.
Stop talking. treat both of those with equal curiosity.
Yeah.
Treat what the experienced worker says and what the newer worker says with equal levels of curiosity and go and learn about why they believe that area is brittle.
Absolutely. Yep.
Because sometimes, I remember this, we had a conversation last week where one of the newer people, they were telling a story. One of their newer workers thought this area was particularly brittle, but there was just they were never taught about it. So they didn't know what to do with it. So they were just scared of it.
Mm, absolutely.
And that just shows that we're clearly missing something in the training or onboarding process that there's a lack of awareness, but you have to be curious about it.
Absolutely. You can't just be like,
well, you must not pay attention.
Yeah. That's going to shut it down. Right. Yeah. We want to understand the perspective from multiple facets. Right. And if you can get somebody with interim experience as well, like if that's a really good understanding of the health of your system is if you have somebody brand new and somebody who's been doing it for a long time and somebody who, you know, knows quite a bit, but maybe doesn't do that process super often and they can kind of give you a really good understanding of what's going on. So that is absolutely one area that we can be making improvements in. The next area is actually treating the fact that we have newer folks coming in as a positive in and of itself. We've talked about the idea of creating habit loops a lot in terms of error rate and in terms of what it's like to become complacent and this idea of going on autopilot. But another thing that makes change hard in any organization is that if somebody's been doing anything for a long time, right, we've become risk normalized to it. We find efficiencies in the process and we are able to normalize out risk that might be like objectively a problem, but for me subjectively, because I haven't experienced it, it doesn't feel like a problem at all. An example of that, which I'm sure we've used at some point, would be like the idea of getting into a car crash and not having a seatbelt. Like objectively, data-wise, we know that wearing a seatbelt dramatically increases the probability of you not losing your life when you come into contact with another high-moving object while in a car. So we know that that's true.
And by the way, we're big seatbelt fans, so wear them if you can.
We know that's true, but then also many of us can think through the history of what it was like to get seatbelt usage ingrained. And it took many years. I mean, it actually took an entire generation. And part of the reason for that is that whether we like it or not, this idea of it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks is true. Meaning you have so many data points in your head of driving a car without a seatbelt and it not being a problem that the introduction of an additional step that maybe doesn't feel necessary to you, and you bump that against your current risk perception of what you how you see driving, and it just doesn't feel like a necessary or relevant thing to do for some people. And so you can see that that transition of using that new technology has changed, and it took a generation before, you know, now a significant number of people wear their seatbelts because you taught somebody to do that from the time that they started to drive. And you can probably think back to any time you learned something new and you had a really good teacher, that there are probably habits that you have that you would consider good habits that you've maintained, even if you don't really see risk or have experienced risk in not doing it. An example for me in driving, I was told a story when I first started to learn how to drive about making sure to check my rearview mirror if I slammed on the brakes hard to see whether or not the person behind me saw that I'd stopped. And if they hadn't, then I might have enough time to sort of get my car out of the way before they slam into the back of the car. And then I was also told a story about somebody who learned that and in learning it actually put it into practice and avoided a car crash. I personally have never had anyone rear-end me, but I still do that practice every time because it was taught to me while I started to learn how to drive. It seemed like a good practice at the time and it became part of the habit loops that I have. So now anytime I slam on the brakes, I do look in the rearview mirror to see if the person behind me has noticed. Why we mention that is that those types of things that we would consider good habits that might feel inefficient to somebody who has already created habit loops around the same process and has not historically had an incident, when you are teaching someone how to do something for the first time, you can actually instill those practices in someone and it makes sense for them to do, and they tend to continue to do it for the length of time that they are doing that task. That is an advantage with having a less experienced workforce that is really, really hard to create in a more experienced workforce. And anyone who's tried to introduce new technology, whether it be like fall protection for folks in the construction industry, or whether it be working in, you know, in countries where machine guarding is not a legal requirement and they're trying to put machine guarding in, I'm sure you have run into the fact that it can be incredibly difficult to change that type of use of technology in places where it's already not common and in places where people don't really see the need for it because they historically never had it and they were successful without it. We can instill that. We can instill different types of use of technology with folks who are brand new if we use the opportunity when they come in to help train them at that moment in time, to actually take over as the organization, as the trainer, in terms of creating good habit loops, use of the technology that you have available to you. That's a huge advantage that I don't think we talk about enough.
It's an opportunity. It's truly an opportunity.
Very, very important opportunity of this is an entire generation of people that can be brought in to use practices that we know statistically will help people, but have been very, very difficult to instill previously.
It's like they say when you're learning golf, always take a lesson before you start. I didn't.
And then you had to unlearn all your...
I have plenty of bad habits, but they always tell you because you have no concept of what you're going to do. I mean, you have some, right? Maybe swung a club once or twice, but you don't really know about how you set up for the ball or where your elbow should be on your backswing or how to take your hands. And you have someone professionally teach you the right way to do it. And guess what? You have really good habits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you still probably shoot over 90, so it's not a problem.
So I think that would be the second place that we would just be encouraging people to deliberately spend time in terms of when we are bringing people, how are we educating folks that have less experience? Are we being very deliberate about it? Or are we just saying, hey, you know, kind of hang out with somebody that's done the job before that has maybe 3 years experience and you're just going to learn on the job with them? Or are we being very deliberate in saying, okay, we have this opportunity of a brand new group of people coming in that we could take our experienced folks and we could pair that with the technology and the processes that we know statistically have improved things. And we can pair that together to help people build in habit loops from the beginning of doing a process.
And this is definitely one of those parts where I say this sometimes, when the consequences feel greater, it becomes harder and harder to apply this hop philosophy.
Say more.
It can be more of a challenge, right? If we're talking about trying something new or changing our approach on something that's very low risk, that's pretty easy to do. We have a pretty high tolerance for trying something new. When we're talking about potentially serious injuries or major operational upsets, it's hard to push back on our
whatever current is
thought process is, yeah. our ingrained thought process. And this is one of those areas where we can just be annoyed at what we have and frustrated and try to keep hiring new people and getting rid of people that we don't think are a fit. Or we can sit down and say, well, if it's happening here and Andy and Matt, however reliable they are, say it's happening, it's happening other places as well. Okay. Then maybe we need to just stuff this anger down for a second and look at our system and say, what can we do differently?
Yeah. And so we have homework in two places, one of which we've given before, right? So the first homework is if you have an opportunity to operationally learn from people who are new to a job and people who have experience, right? Those are the places where you're going to learn about the brittleness of your system, where we would want to be improving design, right? So learn differently in order to design differently. Take any opportunity you can to learn about a portion of a process, especially a process that can have a consequence that can be very severe. So that is homework one of option one of what we can improve with the current reality of hiring. And then the second piece is we'd encourage you to go take a look at any of your training on how to execute a task, whether that be working with a specific tool, right? Whether that be working on creating a specific product, whether that be executing a specific subset of tasks, and just go get a sense of how deliberate your training is, right? Is it set up with the idea that you could have somebody with very little experience coming into the organization and it brings them through a process where they could safely learn how to do something without catastrophic consequence? Or is it, hey, we kind of piecemealed this together over time and it seems to be working because we're not having a lot of terrible things happen. So I guess people understand what they need to do. But the amount of deliberate effort that has gone into designing how we're teaching someone how to do something becomes really, really, really important if we don't have people that have years and years of experience in a specific trade coming in.
I just want it to be known that I did not approve the double homework as a former teacher. I did not sign off on that. So 10,000 points off. We thank you all for listening and we'll talk soon.
Well, that's it.
Yep. Another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
It's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.